Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 11th of August, Anno Domini 2012, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to lose, nothing to choose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. We have a birthday to celebrate today. Steve Wozniak.
Woohoo!
The man who invented the Apple computer. We have someone on the line, but first we're going to do the news. So hang on, Valena. We'll get to you in just a minute. Thank you.
No. I had this clip.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Soundbites.
Very nice. Very, very nice. All right. On Thursday, Adobe announced that it will release an update for Adobe Reader and Acrobat for both Windows and Mac to fix critical security flaws. The updates will be released on August 14th, this coming Tuesday. The pre-notification security advisory warning gives few details except noting the affected software versions and the severity of the security flaws. The flaws are rated critical, meaning malicious native code can be executed without a user's knowledge. Of the 6 versions of Adobe Reader and Adobe Acrobat, 4 have a priority rating of 2, signifying a vulnerability that has historically been at elevated risk, despite no known exploits. However, both products have versions for Windows and Mac that are rated 1, noting that vulnerability is being targeted or at a higher risk of being targeted. These updates should be installed within 72 hours of the security fix release. Many people are opting to stop using Adobe's products altogether, uninstalling them and installing alternatives like Foxit Reader or Cool PDF Reader in lieu of Adobe Reader, and Foxit PDF Editor or Nitro PDF Professional in lieu of Adobe Acrobat. And so our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Adobe warns of critical holes in Reader and Acrobat. And your choices are, I still use Adobe products and I'm happy with them. I still use Adobe products, but I'm getting scared. I love my Adobe alternative products and feel very safe. I print them. I think PDF stands for something dirty. So far, we have 26 votes and the winner is I love my Adobe alternative products and feel very safe, followed fairly closely by I still use Adobe products, but I'm getting scared. And, of course, 5 of you think PDF stands for something dirty. Anyway, that's also our question to you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
So when Dave turns on his mic, your mic gets all tinny and weird in my headset. So
I don't know what that's about.
I keep forgetting, another one of the things I keep forgetting, to try swapping these mics and see if it's the board or it's...
Yeah, who knows? All right, anyway, we're going to go to the phone where Valena has been holding on very patiently in Virginia. Where in Virginia are you calling from, Valena?
Manassas Park.
Manassas Park, Virginia.
That's Northern Virginia.
Yep. And what can we do with you?
Well, I usually would have talked to you guys in Second Life, but I haven't been
there. I knew
that
was you. Didn't I tell you guys that?
Yes, you did. So I thought I would give you a call. I have an Acer Aspire 1, which I bought in 2009, which has XP on it, which I know that's not going to be supported soon. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. That's very true.
I don't know whether to... Well, I don't want to really go to Windows 7, so I was thinking if I should, to go to something else to try Linux.
Ooh.
So my question is, should I just stay with XP, or should I give Linux a try?
I love an adventurous woman.
No lie.
How big a hard drive do you have, Valena?
I'm sorry?
How big a hard drive do you have?
Do you know? I don't know that. Well, it's a netbook, so
yeah,
I wouldn't imagine it would be very big.
Yeah, probably 40 gig. Maybe 80 gig. If you haven't filled up the drive, if you haven't used a lot of the drive, let's say there's 20 gig left,
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you can do is install Linux, and if you, again, as you did with Windows, read every screen carefully, one of the choices will be to let both of them live happily together on the hard drive and dual boot.
Oh, they can both live happily together?
I have a laptop of my own that does exactly that. And I don't know how happy they are since I never boot into Windows anymore, but it does run when I do boot into it.
It's lonely. And you have 127 updates waiting.
Yeah.
Well, I just got rid of all the programs that I knew I would never use, and I am running the Security Tango even as we speak.
You're a good woman.
On both my devices, in fact, my laptop and my Acer. But the one I was thinking about is called UberMix for netbooks. Is that familiar to you?
UberMix is not familiar to me. How interesting is that?
And I'm assuming it's Linux because when I read it in one of the various blogs I read, it was talking about that they use it for, you know, their school netbooks.
Right, right, right. And yes, I'm looking at it now. It's an education based product. It looks like it's got all the things you might need. I don't see, it doesn't tell me off the top what version.
Or should I just go to Linux instead and just forget about this? Because I'm not using my Acer I'm not using the netbook for school.
Right.
I'm using my Asus.
Right. Well, here's what I would do. I would start by setting it up as dual boot. And if Manassas Park has a Linux users group, I guarantee you there will be somebody in that group who is more than happy to help you set that up.
Oh, I didn't think about that. That's
yeah,
a good
absolutely.
Thing to do. I know
absolutely.
Rochester does.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Most cities do. And if not Manassas Park, then somewhere nearby,
okay.
A slightly larger city somewhere nearby. And they will be more than happy to help you. They usually meet monthly or twice a month. So if you want to do that, certainly this looks fine. It's an Ubuntu it's an Ubuntu installation. It looks like it has all kinds of things pre-installed. So yeah, absolutely. It looks designed to fit on netbooks, and that's also a very good thing. Lots of education stuff, which you're not really going to need, but it has full LibreOffice, so you're all set with that. Yeah, I would give it a try. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, the thing about going to the UberMix for schools was if I used it at home and I was more familiar with it, then maybe I could get it into my school.
Yeah, that's exactly what you should be thinking. Because, you know, one of the problems schools have nowadays is that lack of funds that we're all in the midst of. And if you have a free operating system that does everything you need it to do in a school, why not go for it instead of paying for the upgrades? If you've got 100 machines and the upgrade is $70 a piece, there's $7,000 you don't need to spend.
Yeah, really.
You said you were in North.
Can I ask one more question real quick?
Of course.
I don't want to take up your time.
That's fine.
Well, we're here for 2 hours.
I know. I usually listen to you on Sundays because I'm an iTunes subscriber, but I wanted to ask my question, so I called. I know that one or both of you out of the three have the new Nexus.
Oh, Dave and I both have it.
Two out of three.
Steve, I'm an iOS girl.
Yeah.
I love my iPad, iPhone, whatever. But I'm thinking that maybe with school, because the iPad is expensive and we don't have technology funds, that maybe I should, because one of my ESOL teachers would like to get some e-readers, and I'm trying to dissuade her from that.
Yeah.
So maybe going with the Nexus would be a way to go because she would still be able to get to the Internet then. Is that correct?
Yes, it'll get you to the Internet.
For not much more than an e-reader, you can get one of the 7-inch tablets like the Nexus or the Fire.
Right.
Or wait till this fall and maybe we'll see the 7-inch iPad.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that because we were talking about it doesn't fit in the market anywhere. They cancel the iPod Touch and replace it with the 7-inch iPad at the same price.
Well, that's going to make people angry.
Well, I'm waiting for September.
Well, if you want an iPod Touch, you get a phone.
I want the iPhone 5, but I was waiting for that too. But I just I know that you really like that Nick and Dave really like the Nexus.
And
so
love
I was
it.
Wondering.
And I was just telling Nick they just did a comparison against the Nexus and the Nook. And the Nexus One, hands down.
And the Kindle, they did one against the Kindle, and it beat the Kindle as well.
Oh, okay.
The Kindle Fire.
I wouldn't even suggest the Fire, excuse me for saying that, but I wouldn't suggest the Fire or the Nook, because I use the Kindle app on my iPad. So I just figure if you're going to use the e-reader, you do want to have the capability to go to the internet. So
absolutely.
Those aren't even...
Yeah, all the things that you can get on the Nexus 7, particularly if you have a Gmail address, which, oh, they're free too, you can do an amazing number of things. You can read stuff on the Kindle, on the Nook, from the Play Store, from a lot of the free libraries, stuff that you cannot get on your Kindle or your Nook easily, you can get very easily on the... And let's face it. You could buy three Nexus 7s for the price of an iPad.
I know, but I love my iPad.
I'm not saying anything bad about the iPad. What I'm saying is, when your funds are limited...
Because she wants to get it, like six of them for her kids, and I just know that the way our money is, I want to get what's best, but right now it's not feasible for us to get six iPads.
Well, I think what you'll find when you've played with it for a while is that although it isn't an Apple product... You aren't really settling for second best.
Mm-mm.
It's an excellent product.
Yes.
I won't say it's better or worse than an iPad because that's never an argument anybody's ever going to win. What I will say.
Oranges.
What?
It's apples and oranges.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's
apples and Googles. but what you will find is that it is an excellent product in its own right, and you won't feel like you settled.
Mm-mm.
Right. Well, I'm sort of split down the middle anyways because I love iOS, as I said, but I'm also a Google certified teacher, so I use all Google things. So I'm a split personality.
Yeah. There you go.
And I also found a website, linuxusergroups.org, that you can find Linux groups around the country.
And
there's a bunch of them in Virginia. You said you're in Northern Virginia?
Yeah.
There's the Northern Virginia Linux Users Group at tux.org.
And
then there's some in Charlottesville and Richmond and Tidewater and Yorktown as well.
I'm sure there's something in D.C., which I'm close to, too. So.
Well, I think that's because when I went to the tux.org, the Northern Richmond or Northern Virginia Users Group, they were, the last event they have published is March 2010 in Washington, D.C.
Well, anyway, give that a shot.
If I do put Linux on my Aspire, I'll still be able to get to the internet and stuff, right? Because I'm not.
Yes, that's the whole point.
Linux.
Yep. Yes.
Okay.
And again, talk to the folks who do that at the user group, because if there are special drivers, they can download them and make it easier for you. And check in with me in Second Life and let me know how that all works out for you.
I have to get back in there. I haven't been in there in so long.
But thank
you guys, and enjoy Rochester. I miss you.
Thanks. We miss you. Have fun.
Have a great day. And I am, by the way, I am a member of Jazz.
God bless you. That's
Sweet.
What we like to hear. Thanks, Valena.
Have a good afternoon.
You too. And, you know, you can join us. You can all join us every Sunday night at 9 o'clock Eastern. That's 6 o'clock Linden time in Second Life. If you don't... know where we are and can't find us through a search, although you should be able to do that, ask for me. I'm Neil Infinity, N-I-H-I-L Infinity, and I'll teleport you in.
You can also do a find for sound bites, can't you?
You should be able to find it.
Yeah.
But you can also ask me for a teleport. All right, our next caller is Tom. From Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
I'm infected. Over the years, whenever I ran Stinger, never got any problems. I was getting knocked off of Outlook Express, and when I ran Stinger, there was something on there, some Trojan that says it could not be repaired.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, messes up my desktop. Like I said, it knocks me off of Outlook Express. And I was just looking for a way to clean it up.
Well, have you danced the security tango?
Well, I've tried. It won't let me, like I said, a run right. stinger.
He's got root kit.
You've got a root kit in there.
They say something, yeah, there was some note about a root kit.
Yep. Yeah. Here's the deal. there are some new, well, they're not new anymore, but there are some viruses that actually become what are called root kits. They attach themselves to the root processes of your operating system, which means they actually boot up before the operating system boots, mm-hmm. which means you cannot get rid of them with something that boots after the operating system boots. The way you fix it is to take the drive out, install it in another machine as the second drive, make sure you don't boot from it so you don't infect the first drive, and then you can clean it. Now, you can do that yourself, or you can take it to somebody like Dave or Steve who can do it for you. Of course, they will charge you. That is their job. But it's not terribly expensive. And, you know, how much is your time worth? And do you have the ability and stuff like that to fix that? So I think that's kind of where you have to go with this.
Yeah, I noticed when I logged off.
Tom, hold on.
Okay.
Don't hang up. We got to take a break. So stay on the line. And we'll talk to you when we come back. Going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Tom from Rochester, New York, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we have Tom from Rochester on the line. Tom.
Yeah, just to continue, I noticed when I ran Stinger, I got a note that it said that the rootkit scan result, it was not scanned. And then right. when I turned the computer off, it says new program installed.
Yep.
It was turned, it's auto startup service.exe.
Yep, that's mm-hmm. the rootkit.
Yep.
Now, is that this auto startup service, EXE, is this some type of a Trojan or a virus?
This is the rootkit.
Yeah,
and,
that's the rootkit.
And it's one of the many things that you cannot remove until you remove the drive and do it from another machine.
Okay.
So
right.
so bring it to somebody and have them do it, and your machine will then be clean.
Okay. Yeah, because I know from your Soundbites website, I contacted the link to Microsoft. And they said that they can do some remote access.
Yeah, that's not going to do it.
That's rough.
It really
yeah.
is not going to do it.
Right.
There are some anti-rootkit software, but most of the rootkits are so buried deep inside.
Hard drive's got to come out.
Yep.
All right, okay. Now, would using a Mozilla product as opposed to Outlook Express prevent something like this?
It can't hurt, but it depends on how you got it. And,
yeah.
And, you know, nowadays it's not even... You know, it used to be, well, stop going to shady websites
yeah.
and stop opening stuff you don't know. But nowadays, continue to not open stuff you don't know from the person. But in addition, it's almost everywhere now. Rootkits are coming on pretty much every ad and every website.
And
so,
yeah, the vector is now mostly websites and ads. Something we're calling drive-by download. So
yep.
a Java exploit, a Flash exploit. We were talking earlier about the Flash. So you just go to a regular website. Facebook a couple of months ago had a problem where a virus was infecting one of the ads that was being displayed, and hundreds of thousands of people got it.
Also, and I would add on to what Nick was saying, though, as far as emails, though. Even if you're getting some emails from your friends, they could have been hacked. But if they're sending you something that's totally obscure, that, you know, like something on a banking or something else that you know they wouldn't send to you anyways, don't click on it. Even though you know them, they could be infected and sending stuff to you.
Yep. The way to keep yourself safe is first, turn off the preview pane.
Yeah, I don't have that on. Yeah.
And secondly, set your email program to text only. And then it never runs any HTML, which means it never runs any JavaScript, which means it never runs any of the stuff that could infect your machine.
Yeah, it seemed like it started a friend of mine, somebody that I knew,
yep.
sent me an email,
mm-hmm.
Something, said, check this out, and...
Bingo! Yep.
Yeah, well...
When I clicked on it, nothing happened on the, I couldn't click on to that
yeah.
website.
You did.
It did work.
Started it. But
yep.
I know other people that got it, and they don't have a problem.
The toss of the dice. They may have gotten it. They may not have gotten it.
You have to be very wary of those email messages that just say, hey, check this out.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It wasn't one of those things. I'll never,
never open
those. Because I got something from somebody who got hacked through Facebook, and... They say, listen, Tom, we want you to check this out.
Tom,
you know, and I did that. I never done it.
Tom, we have to go. We've got a lot of people waiting to get in.
Thanks for your help.
Thank you, Tom. It's almost impossible to not get infected, but you got to do your best. And be careful. One of the best ways is to turn off HTML. One of the nice things about Thunderbird, which of course isn't being updated anymore, is that they had a simple HTML, so you could still see bold and italics and stuff, but you never
rich text versus full HTML.
Right. All right, our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Welcome, James. What's your question?
Good afternoon. All of a sudden, I started getting these script error messages, script debugging. What is that?
Are they on websites?
Yeah. Like sometimes when I open Internet Explorer.
Yeah. What it basically is somehow your debugging got turned on. When you go to a website, most websites have a lot of scripts on them, JavaScripts or PHP scripts or other types of scripts. And when you're writing a script yourself, you like to have a debugging console on so you can track down the bugs. So what apparently has happened is somehow in your browser that debugging script is turned on, so you're seeing those concepts. What browser are you using?
Internet Explorer.
So let's see if we can Google how to turn off the debugging.
I did that. It said go to the Advanced tab and check mark a couple of things there. Disable script debugging.
Right.
Yeah, so you want to uncheck those so that the scripts don't display.
The
command is disable debugging.
Yeah, that's
so you want to check it on.
So I should check that and.
To check it means you are disabling debugging. It's backwards. I know. They're Microsoft.
Yeah, it says disable script debugging and disable script debugging other.
Right.
Those two you should check.
Right, absolutely.
And that should sort of stop it?
That should stop it. If you still get them occasionally, depending on what website you go to, then they're probably coming from the other side, and there's nothing you can do about that. The website you're going to has a script error, and sometimes you will see those.
I think I was getting it when I opened up the Internet Explorer.
That would be yours locally.
And what's your homepage set to?
My Yahoo.
That may be part of it as well. There may be script errors there. Yeah. The other thing you want to do is definitely dance the security tango in case there is something in your machine. But it's less likely that there is, but of course, you should regularly dance the security tango anyway.
Yeah. How about the Google Chrome? Can you have both browsers?
Yes, I often do.
Oh, I just download the Chrome and can you go back and forth?
Yes, I often do. I often have them both open at the same time, as a matter of fact.
Uh-huh. Maybe I should try that too.
Yeah, Google Chrome is a terrific product. When you install it, pay attention to every screen because one of them will say, do you want me to copy over all of your settings from Internet Explorer, which means you get the same bookmarks and all that stuff, and that's a good thing.
And I won't lose them on Internet Explorer.
No, it doesn't take them away. It just copies them.
Copy over, yeah. So in other words, if I put the Chrome in, I can, if I end up not liking it, all the Internet Explorer will still be the same?
Exactly the same.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Good
luck.
Have
a nice day.
You too. And that reminds me to thank all the people who have been so generous as to click the donate button on Security Tango. It costs me a decent amount of money to run that every month, and I appreciate the assistance. So thank you.
Yeah, so there was a question in the forums about syncing your bookmarks to your tablets, and the easiest thing is if you use the same browser on your computer and your tablet, so Safari on both or Chrome on both. But most of the tablet, you know, an Android tablet with Chrome would be able to sync with Chrome on your computer. Same thing with Safari on the iPad, and then Firefox is working on syncing bookmarks as well. But one of the things you can do if you're running an Android tablet with Chrome or an Apple tablet with Safari, if you're using, say, Firefox as your primary browser, you go to Safari and say import bookmarks from Firefox. Now they're imported into Safari on your computer, and then they'll sync to your tablet.
Right.
So you can synchronize your bookmarks.
Same with
Google. It's not as automatic if you're not using the same browser on both platforms.
Right. In fact, I have Google at my home machine, my work machine, my tablet, my phone, and they all have the same set of browser
that
tabs.
That tablet, though, was so easy. I couldn't believe it.
All you did was turn it on and watch stuff install.
I turned it on.
Bing, bing, bing.
It already knew of my Gmail account. It said, wait a minute, I need your password. So I typed in my password, sat back, and that thing went off, grabbed these other apps. It says, you want to do this? You want to do that? And I thought, yeah. It just did it.
And you were done.
Yeah.
Yep. It's great stuff.
It is wild stuff.
Yep. All right. Our next caller is Vic from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Vic. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you guys?
Peachy.
I got two questions. First one is... my Hotmail account is associated with all my online bill paying. Now, when they go to Outlook, what am I supposed to let everyone know that is associated with my Hotmail account that I'm changing it, or will it automatically change? What's the deal with that?
Well, Outlook is just a mail reader that has nothing to do with it. You can read your mail from any mail address you want. So you can use it to read Hotmail, you can use it to read Gmail, you can use it to read Yahoo Mail.
Oh, okay.
All right. So it's just a program that you tell it whatever mail you're using.
All right. And the next question is, with Skype, I called up a couple of weeks ago and spoke to you guys about I was having a problem with the person I was talking to image freezing after about 1 minute. So I thought maybe it might be the HD webcam. So I went to a non-HD webcam yesterday, same thing. So I said, well, I'm done with Skype. So I tried Windows Messenger and with my HD webcam, and it works fine. The only thing is... I cannot see myself in Windows Messenger. Is there something I got to click? Because in Skype, you can see the person that you're talking to, and then in the lower right-hand corner, you see yourself, how you look.
Right, right, right.
I don't know offhand. No one uses Windows Messenger. So
yeah. Unfortunately, we're all looking that up. What type of camera do you have?
Well, I have a Logitech model C920. It's an HD camera.
I have heard that the 910 is a much better camera, even though the 920 has got a bigger number.
Doesn't help it, man.
Yeah. Oftentimes in the preferences somewhere is where you turn on either your layout or what you want to see.
Now, when you do talk to other people, they can see you?
Yeah, they can see me, no problem.
All right.
I can now the screen doesn't freeze up anymore now that I went to Windows Live Messenger. But again, in the Skype, it used to be in the bottom right-hand corner. You could see yourself, small, I don't know, it was like a 3x3 window or something
that. All right, here's what you do. Inside Windows Messenger, you select Setup Audio under Video Call, which is one of the choices there. You have Share and Video Call and Games and stuff. One of the choices will be Setup Audio and Video Devices. So that lets you set up your speaker, your audio devices, your speaker and your microphone.
Yeah, that's set.
And it also lets you set up your Logitech camera, which I guess you have to tell it which camera you want in order to actually see yourself correctly.
Oh, okay.
Apparently, it lets the other people see you, but if you don't set it up correctly, you can't see you.
Do I look at custom? Is that what? Because right now it says default, and then it goes speaker. And then it says microphone. It shows the microphone to the webcam.
Select those things. Select the whatever speakers or headphones you want.
Right.
Select the microphone you want the list. Mm-hmm. Select the correct one and test it. Make sure it's working.
Right.
Right. And then after you find your audio stuff, hit the next button and it'll ask you about your webcam. And you should see your picture there. If you don't, you have to select the correct camera.
I do, and I see myself right now.
Then it should... Wow, it should work.
I'm wondering that if in the call somewhere, you have to enable you to see you.
Oh, okay. I never thought about that.
Because that's in essence, more bandwidth on the... or not bandwidth, more processor power to display the two video images. Because you're seeing them and seeing you, but I posted a link that Nick found about how to configure Windows Live Messenger with your Logitech webcam, so that may help as well.
Okay. The other thing is, there may be a switch to go from photo to video. I don't know. I haven't.
What do you guys use?
I use Google
Hangout.
Hangout. Thank you.
Google Hangout. Okay.
Well, see, one of the problems with these services is they only work with themselves, pretty much. So Google Hangout only works with Google Hangout. Windows Messenger only works with Windows Messenger. Skype is one of the well, Skype only works with Skype, but Skype is available on all platforms, so a lot of people like it. But it's one of those programs that we hate. Was it hate to like or like to hate?
Yeah, exactly.
Because it does have
love-hate relationship.
Yeah, love-hate relationship because it does have so many problems so frequently. Yeah.
In Windows Live Messenger, select Actions.
Okay.
Select Video,
mm-hmm.
and click Show Your Webcam.
You found that on the HP website?
Yes.
Why is that on the HP website?
I don't know. I believe that stands for Holy Patoot. It's here.
Yeah. Well, probably telling it how to set up Windows Live Messenger to your HP webcam built into your HP laptop.
But that should do it. Okie doke?
All right. Thank you very much.
Good luck. I happen to use... Hangouts, Google Hangouts, because I can talk to 10 people simultaneously. So I have had I'm part of a couple of different startups, startup companies, and sometimes we don't meet in person. We meet through Google Hangouts, and I can see all the people in the group because there are fewer than 11 of us. So I can see all the people in the group and. And it's really kind of nice, actually. I have to be honest. It's fast and easy. The video is great so far, at least, and I've been pretty pleased with it. But again, it depends on who you're talking to. When I talk to my daughter, and she's in college, we use Skype. Sometimes we use Hangouts. Sometimes we use whatever's handy. As long as I can talk to her, I don't really care what the product is. Although people have been saying there have been problems with Skype, Microsoft recently bought them, so I'm sure that they will be fixing whatever the problems are as soon as possible.
yeah, right.
I'm just being polite. I'm a polite guy.
There was a really neat, in the olden days of text chat, a program called Adium that ran on all the platforms and worked with like 20 or 30 different IM networks. And, of course, it's blocked here, so that you could talk with AOL and Microsoft and Yahoo and Apple and Linux and every messaging service there was, because everyone had their own messaging service.
Yep. There actually is a program for Androids that will talk to Skype, and I think there's one that'll... No, maybe not. There's one that'll talk to Skype... Well, you can use Skype, but there's also one that'll talk to the iChat thing there. I just don't remember what the name of it is. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. And we are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We have no one on the line right now, so you can give us a quick call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Well, much ado has been made of weather-resistant cameras, but it's all a moot point if the memory card dies, isn't it? Panasonic wants that level of survivability in its SDHC and SDXC cards, and its new UHS I-level SDAB and SDUB lines are tested for the kind of abuse that could see the camera give up the ghost first. The cards can take all kinds of punishments that we often associate with rugged gear, such as temperatures from minus 13 Fahrenheit to 185 degrees Fahrenheit, immersion in 3.5 feet of water for half an hour, and the usual steep drops. It's beyond this that the resistance level become truly exotic. The cards are also built to survive zaps of electricity, proximity to magnets, and exposure to X-rays. If it all becomes too much to bear, the design will even fuse on the inside to prevent fire from burning the card.
Whoa.
Those who like what they see will only have to decide whether or not they want the SDAB range's 95 megabit read speeds and 80 megabyte writes, or are willing to settle for the SDUB lines of a mere 90 megabytes per second. That's 5 megabytes per second slower. and 45 megabit per second writes, which is half the speed almost, a little more than half the speed. We have yet to see if or when the SD cards cross the Pacific after their September 8th launch in Japan, although we hope so. With that kind of extra tight design, extra tough design, our photos are more likely to endure than we will. Notice that none of the stuff I've said talks about read-write cycles, how often you can write to the drive and then read from them again without error. But if you buy one, put some backup files on it, and never touch it again, chances are good that alien archaeologists will be excavating them just before our sun goes supernova. So our question to you, do you use SD cards for backup of important files? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
I like this one headline for the story. Panasonic's new rugged SD card will commit suicide to save your photos.
Exactly.
Well, and this is Panasonic that makes the Toughbook, so they're used to making these rugged things.
You know, you talk about the speed net, you know, and they say, well, if you can't suffer with this and that. Folks have forgotten so quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day when we were still working with, you know, 5 1/4 inch floppies, and you put it in and you'd see it transfer.
Take 30 seconds to save your text file.
Yeah.
That's right. Those days when you could turn on your computer, go get a cup of coffee, chit-chat with people,
yep.
Come back. Maybe it's up by now.
Yeah. Or the old days when we used to do dial-up.
Yep.
Put it, you know. Now, this is going back even farther. I'm saying when you used to have the coupler. So you take your phone,
the hand cradle,
put it into the coupler, and you had to do the handshaking. You'd sit there and wait, and hopefully it would negotiate it if the lines weren't too dirty. And
if you had the screaming 300 baud one.
Yep.
Oh.
Yep.
We forget so quickly.
Yeah, we really do. But this thing is amazing. I mean, can you imagine? You can put your pictures on this thing and be fairly certain.
They're going to be there forever.
Survive, yeah.
They're going to be there an awful long time.
Longer than us.
Yeah, exactly right.
Oh, wow.
So, all right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Barb from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Barb. What's your question?
Well, I have a question about backing up my laptop to an external hard drive. It says I've had it for a while. Now, don't get mad. I have not backed it up, and I know I'm risking losing all my stuff, and
yep.
I do now have an external hard drive. Is it something it says to, I mean, usually you use CDs to do that, correct?
Yes, you can.
Used to.
You
but
used
I
to.
But can use the external hard drive, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, say you have 100 gigs of data on your computer. Well, that's, quick math here, that's, 2,000 floppy disks? Yeah, 2,000 floppies or 200 or 300 CDs.
Oh, wow.
And so you
okay.
don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
one external okay. hard drive is much easier.
Well,
so the external hard drive is better.
Okay. Yes,
yeah.
And in general, really when you were saving things to CD, as far as the computer was concerned, that's just another drive.
Okay.
Right? So
okay.
if you've got an external hard drive, that's just another drive. So the computer doesn't care. The big
okay.
difference is it's easier to erase things accidentally from an external hard drive.
Oh, okay.
Right. Whereas with a CD, the chances are likely that it'll still be there in a couple of years. On the other hand,
right.
let's not forget that CDs really only have a shelf life of a few years.
Okay. So I would just plug this external hard drive in. It would my computer would acknowledge it's there.
What operating system do you have?
I got it up now about set up backup. So just go with that.
Yeah, a lot of hard drives come with their own backup
software.
Program. Or Windows and Mac both have their own internal backup programs.
I'm running Windows 7.
Yeah, the
it should just find it, set it up, and then it may even ask you if you want to use it, but you may have to go into your backup program and tell it now. Whatever drive letter it comes up as, D-E,
okay.
P-Z,
and with Windows 7, the only thing that you really have to worry about backing up, though, is usually the user folder. I tell folks, don't worry about backing up your Windows folders and all that, because or program folders. That's just wasting space. And if the system crashed, you got to reinstall
yeah.
Windows anyway. So there's no sense of backing those folders up.
You can
right.
do yeah. Oftentimes you can do a quick backup, which is just your documents, or you can do a quick restore, which is a clone the entire hard drive.
Right.
So it's
okay.
it's a quick backup means a long restore. But a long backup is a quick restore. So,
mm-hmm.
but most people just back up.
You're confusing me now.
Well, right. Remember to back up your documents folder.
Yeah.
If you
okay.
only ever put things in your documents folder,
Pictures, music.
Right, pictures, music, all of that stuff. All if you put them in the pictures folder and the documents folder, those are all under My Documents.
Yes, right.
So
right.
If you just back up the My Documents folder, then if your machine ever dies and you buy a new one, you just restore everything to the My Documents folder, and it's like you never left.
Or it's even if you accidentally delete a file, you can get it from your backup without needing to worry about...
Right, just go in that hard drive, look in the folder, find the thing, drag it over, you're done.
So it did just bring it up, expansion drive E, and I see it says use this drive for backup. So
bingo.
That's what I would click.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You got it.
Okay.
And all as
right,
long as you've
thank you for helping my brother Tom with the rootkit problem this morning too.
Well, it's a family affair here. Thanks, Barb.
I told him to call you guys, so thank you.
I'm glad he did. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now tell all your other friends to give us a call. Thanks, Barb. I'm assuming that she and Tom are friends as well as siblings.
That's often not the case.
Yeah.
Yeah. We apparently missed a party in Norway. A mother bear and her three cubs broke into a Norwegian cabin, ate all the food, drank all the beer, and left. Officials are saying it was one heck of a party.
I cannot get those stains out of my bear suit. Yeah. I'm telling you right now.
so this article goes on about that there's been a lot of interesting bears stories lately. Apparently a bear walked into the a lodge at a resort in New Mexico, and... Bears in the wild. We're encroaching on their territory so bad. They're joining our parties.
And why not, after all? But we're not going to talk about bears now. We're going to talk about Buffalo, specifically Buffalo, New York, and our friend Joe. Hiya, Joe. What do you know?
Hi. In Cheektowaga, actually. Close enough.
Right, Cheektowaga.
Because Dave can spell Buffalo. Dave can spell Buffalo.
Faster, yes.
Much faster.
Well, actually,
you're asking about...
I was going to say, it actually comes up as different as caller ID.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe,
true.
What do you need?
Because I'm using Google Voice, it will say Orchard Park.
Yes, it does.
Where the pop is. You were asking if I back up to SD card. Well, yeah, sort of, kind of. Backup on Android tablets is a little limited. So, yes, I do back up to an SD card. However, in the latest version of Titanium Backup, they added Google Drive capability. So, believe it or not, I have better disaster recovery for my Android tablet, which I play around with a little bit, than my main workstation computer. That's kind of bad, but considering, you know, I have 80 gigabytes on my workstation, that'd be awfully expensive to back up.
Not terribly. Take a look at the prices for additional storage on Google Drive. It's not terribly expensive. And if you have if you have a domain and you move your email and apps to that, it's still pretty cheap. So you can certainly do that. What we're talking about for the rest of you is, instead of backing up to some device on his desk, Joe is backing up his Android to Google's cloud. And the likelihood of all of Google's cloud going away is pretty slim.
Right.
So he's well backed up. And you can do that. Google Drive gives you 5 gig. You can buy more gig.
25 gigs for $250 a month. All the way up to 16 terabytes for $800 a month.
Yeah, but how...
Yeah, at the low end. 25 gigs for $250 a month, 100 gigs for $5 a month. So at the low end,
so $60 a year
for 100 gigs of online backup space.
Right, and think about $60 a year for that kind of peace of mind. Cheap.
Relatively so, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on what you're backing up.
Yeah.
Right. We just had a report of a guy who in the news who got hacked and lost all of his granddaughter's pictures.
Oh, my goodness. That's the next thing I was going to talk about. Van Honen, writer for Wired.
Yep.
The thing is the security implications. Well, let's face it. Amazon and Apple and a bunch of other companies, they messed up, and they messed up big time.
Yeah, they really did.
We almost have to admire the bad guys because they really did a number on this poor guy. So
here's how they did it, right?
Yeah.
They got some information.
They were after his Twitter account to begin with.
Right, and first they got through Facebook, they got some information. And one of the things they got was the last four digits of his of his credit card,
which he got from Amazon.
Which they got from Amazon. That's right. It was from Amazon. Then they called Apple. No, and then they changed, using that, they changed his email address.
The I forgot your password email address. They were able to see was a Mobile Me account.
Right, and his security question was, you know, what's my home address, which they also got off the net. Yep. So they changed that. Then they called Apple and said, look, I need to reset my password. They said, well, what's your security thing? And he told them. They said, what's the last four digits of your credit card? They told him. So they changed it.
Yep.
And actually, I heard it was even worse than that. They asked him, you know, what are you, you know, they asked him a security question. Oh, I forgot that. And it was a bunch of social engineering like that he didn't, they didn't know any of the security questions. They did all this stuff for him anyway.
Yeah.
So between Google and Apple and Amazon and Twitter, the bad guys were able to get enough information to convince Apple to change his iCloud password. Right. So then the bad guys went and remote wiped. We've talked about this before. If your iPad or iPod or Android device is stolen, you can remotely erase it. Well, the bad guys remotely erased his iPad, his iPhone, and his computer.
Right. One of the things that I've got on Google is two-factor authentication. So if you try...
That would have been a big help in this case.
Yeah, if you try to change my password, it sends a code to my phone, which I have to enter before it lets you change my password.
Actually, that's a little bit different. That's their password recovery. Two-factor authentication, they can send you a text message that you need to log in. You can't even log in unless you have this second code.
Right.
Well, that's right. That's what I'm saying. They send you a code that you need.
Which is why most people don't want to turn it on, because it's annoying and obtrusive. But
I'd rather be a little annoyed.
Yeah, than lose all your stuff.
Right. So for $60 a year, I can back up all my stuff and nobody else can get at it because I've got two-factor authentication.
Yep. So in the wake of this issue, both Amazon and Apple have suspended password resets over the phone. So all the regular people who can't remember their passwords, which I'm sure Dave does too, and we all the time, people are coming in and don't remember their passwords. So we have to keep a list of them all for them.
Yeah.
So I guess, how do you change it? Well, I guess you go in and talk to an Apple genius, assuming he's not on a plane or taking a pregnant woman to
That happen in our store too. People bring in an iPod that's locked or iPhone that's locked because you put the password in wrong too many times, and it's stolen. So now we're requiring people to bring receipts in with the iPod before we can reset the password.
Right, right. All right, that's it. We're done for this minute. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
We're done. Well, we're done for this minute, and we're done for this hour. But despair not. We will be back for an entire whole nother hour. We're going to take a short but much-needed break because I need to go get more water. And then we'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. You can call us 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Because we're going to come back with a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to Soundbites, and we are right here on the member-supported, that's member-supported, Jazz 90.1. And let me take this moment to thank all of our members for keeping us all on the air. We'll be back for a whole nother hour.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And in the IRC chat, Jerry says Ustream just went offline. Steve is checking that out. He'll hope to get it back on as soon as possible.
Should be back on now.
And it should be back on now. And in the meantime, we are going to talk to George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Hi. Actually, I have a thought to share with some of the other viewers.
Oh, excellent.
There was a lady that called in here several minutes ago, talked about doing backups or the fact she wasn't doing them, and she knew that she should be. And I'll tell you something I've done to help me get over that little hurdle of procrastinating.
Uh-huh.
Did a couple of thumb drives. I happen to use 2 gigabytes, and I have the Word files, Excel files, etc., stored in an active area, and I back that up once a week. Just drag it over onto the thumb drive. And one advantage of working with two or more is that you guard against the failure of the drive itself, which,
yep,
if you're always backing up on some other hard drive, can be somewhat of a risk.
Yeah, especially businesses will often have multiple rotating backups, so that if bad coincidence, if your primary machine and your backup happen to fail at the same time, you've got another backup somewhere.
Exactly. Now,
yeah,
the point I would make is I have kind of a simple situation. So I've got about 750 megabytes that I back up weekly.
Right.
And by getting that onto a schedule, the most recent material is, in fact, captured. And then once or twice a year, I go onto an extra hard drive and get it all moved over there and do a more thorough job. Now, there's one other advantage to what I have. I do the backup when I'm listening to sound bites.
Yeah.
There you go.
Reminder to do it.
Reminder to back up, yeah.
Nice idea.
For a lot of people, your documents are relatively small.
Yes.
It's your photos that are much bigger, and video is really big.
That's right.
And a lot of times, yeah, your documents folder will fit on a flash drive real easy.
Very simple, very inexpensive, and it's a way to get started without having to undertake a bigger, more sophisticated approach.
Yep.
And I think just getting a little practice with it helps to work through that.
Yeah, one of the problems people have is that backup really looks like a huge job, so people put it off.
Exactly.
And if you do it regularly and start small and move up from there, it's not a huge job at all. And that's a good point, George. Thanks.
Okay.
Excellent.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah,
one of the things that I discovered, and I have to share this, if you use Google's Drive, Google Docs on Google,
yep,
Drive, the doc format doesn't take up any of your 5 gigs.
Nice.
So one of the things you can do is when you upload a document, you can tell Google, turn it into a Google Doc format. So now you can put thousands of documents up there, and they take none of your 5 gig.
And you can turn it back into a Word file, for example.
When
you
download
anyway.
It, you can say, I want, yeah, it to be Word. Or I turn them all into Open Office, but yes, you know, whatever you want, RTFs, plain text,
nice,
anything you want. And so one of the things that I've been looking at doing, and I really haven't started it yet, is all the things that I'm backing up everywhere else. For example, as I write my weekly column, I can back it up to there and say, make this a Google Docs format, and boom, takes up no space. And they'd all be up there saved. So that's just a thought. Anyway, back. Yeah.
One other thing, in talking about security.
Yes.
Orchard Park sent us a text, said perhaps you should bring up how security is so important when all is centralized, like, for example, the total Google experience.
Well, exactly right. And that's one of the reasons that I've moved to two-factor authentication. So when I go onto a new device,
mm-hmm,
it says, well, you're on a new computer. Put in the code. And,
yep,
you think to yourself, what code? And then, bing, your phone goes off. There's my code. So you can, even if I gave you my password right now, you could not get into my Google Mail without that extra code. So, you know, you can call Google, and they'll say, and give them all the other information. Oh, here's the last 4 digits and yada, yada, yada. And they'll say, okay, we've given you a temporary password. Go in and change it. When you do, my phone goes off. And you won't have that extra code. You can't get into my Gmail or my Google Drive or my Picasa,
yep,
or anything else. And that's what's so beautiful about two-factor authentication. Is it a tiny, tiny, tiny little pain in the patoot to set it up and
yeah,
get it running? Yes. Once you've done that, you're much more secure.
How,
I'm not saying completely secure. Anybody can get into,
yeah, but,
anything.
Yeah, but how, you know, how important is that data, and how, you know, do you really want to put the effort to it? Because if you don't, then don't complain if it gets hacked or destroyed or you lose it and that type of stuff. You know what I mean?
Right. If I lose my tablet or you steal it, you have to, well, first you have to have my codes to get in.
Yep.
And I don't have your simple four-digit, you know, 1, 2, 3.
Beyond that. Well, that. You're beyond that.
And that's one thing you can do on iOS, iPad, iPhone, iPod Touch. You can turn off that four-digit PIN and turn on a full alphanumeric keyboard.
Right.
So four-digit PIN, there's only 10,000 combinations. With a couple hours, I might be able to break in. But if you type it wrong, what is it, more than five times, it starts locking you out for longer and longer time. In fact, someone posted that on the internet. It's apparently a 32-bit number that it stores that in. Because he locked his iPad out for 2 million minutes, 2.7,
nice.
whatever that big number is.
Nice.
Oops.
Yeah, and I haven't found a limit in Picasa yet for the number of... I'm sure there is one. I just don't know what it is for the number of pictures you can put in. Anyway, to the phones, our next caller, Larry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's your question?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Who came in? Oh, us.
With regard to secure passwords, I've become more aware that I need to move to some of the so-called really more secure passwords, 15 characters or more. Problem is, no way I can remember those things. I can't remember my six-letter password.
Let me make it easy for
you. Yeah, it doesn't have to be random nonsense characters that are impossible to remember.
The important part is the length, not the characters.
It was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
Is a great password, including the spaces, the commas, and the periods.
So long is better than complex.
A phrase. Like you say, Nick, just a phrase with maybe a number in it.
I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree, period, 3.
Huh.
It's a great password, because what's the deal now is this, Larry. It's not about what characters you use, because computers don't understand characters. They don't really understand words. What they understand is what's in their dictionary, and their dictionary can include A-A-A-A, A-A-A-A-B, A-A-A-A-C, right? So that's not going to make you safe. What's going to make you safe is if it's long enough, it'll take 100 years for them to crack it. Unless they get really, really, right. really lucky. And there are things called rainbow tables.
Okay, hold, I need to get my... And I probably I want to get off the line and really listen, because I have a number of favorite accounts, including my bank account, and I access them from the PC world and from the Mac world at home. And so I'm becoming more and more aware. I've just listened to you, and I read about the story of, you know, picking up different information from bits and pieces and hacking someone. So last night I started to do more, and I found these random number generators or random characters. And I said, there's no way.
I remember
that stuff.
No.
And I'm a little leery about just writing them in places and locking them in my desk at work or putting them someplace at home. I don't know that that's a good strategy either.
There are password manager programs that will store long, complex passwords for you under a single password that you do have to remember.
Right.
They exist for all the OSs, and there's a couple of them like LastPass and 1Pass and KeePass that will cross-platform. So the same program on Mac, Windows, Android, and iOS. In fact, I was going to mention earlier, the Gibson Research Corporation, GRC.com, he did a really cool episode of Security Now, which is an internet podcast, that he called Password Haystacks, that talked about how long is better than complex. And he's got a little cracking estimate thing on his webpage. And he also did an episode on all of the different password loggers and password managers that you can use to help you remember your big passwords. He actually started out, he had a something called Perfect Paper Passwords, where he generated 64-bit random character passwords, and then you use them and cross them off when you're done using it.
Well, look,
it expanded into something much easier by long passwords.
Right. So here's the other thing. Let's say your favorite lyrics were "If It Were Within Our Power, Beyond the Reach of Slavish Pride." Well, that's from The Kingdom of the Blind, The One-Eyed Man is King, which is by Dead Can Dance. And you use that as your bank password. You can actually write down somewhere bank-dead-can-dance. You know how many lyrics Dead Can Dance have? If you don't go singing that every time you put it in, who's going to guess it?
Yep.
Oh.
And the other thing we always...
So pick a lyric, not the one everybody knows.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you're a big Buddy Holly fan, maybe you don't use any of his stuff. But you know, you use a song you like whose lyrics you can remember and that you can associate with your bank either by putting some obscure reminder on a piece of paper or using a program like KeePass to keep track of it. And then you can type in a whole set of lyrics if you want to.
And you can use the service you're logging into as part of your password. So, you know, say you have a Citibank account, it can be, you know, King James Bible Citibank as your long password. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So to help you remember which password you used for what service. Because you should use different passwords on all your services. And one of the things that the Matt Honan breach showed is that you shouldn't link your accounts together. So in your Amazon account, don't make your Google account be the backup password. And in your Google account, don't make your Hotmail account be the backup password.
Okay.
So unfortunately, well, yeah, it makes it harder for us to deal, but it makes it much, much harder for the bad guys to break in.
Right. So passwords that are longer are better than passwords that are obscure. And use of song lyric or a book title or a favorite quote. And then that lets you associate the band or the person who made the quote with that account, and you can even write that down in your wallet.
Okay.
Right? Because, I mean, how many quotes has Mark Twain or you know, Walt Whitman put out? Right, so... as long as you don't use the obvious top three of each, you're in good shape.
Okay. Well, I do appreciate you. I'm going to get off the air, and if you're going to continue this conversation a little bit, I am going to listen and jot down what you say and probably play back your program later on tonight.
That's what we like to hear.
I do appreciate your help as usual.
Thanks, Larry.
Day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Yeah, I do that all the time. My passwords are long and complex. Because I use phrases of one sort or another, whether they're lyrics or poem lines or story lines or quotes or whatever they are, and they include capital letters and lowercase letters. They include commas. They include other punctuation. They include spaces. I'll throw in a number here and there, and that makes them so much more difficult because of not just complexity but also length than anything else, and that just makes... And I can easily remember, oh, my Gmail account is associated with this.
Uh-huh.
My whatever account is associated with that. So you don't have to remember A47J left elbow 3. You just have to remember beneath the spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands.
And in fact, one of the suggestions is to just pad your password out. A bunch of commas, a bunch of periods, or comma, period, until you've got 15, 20 characters. So the using the password haystack here thing, you know, if your password is dog, it can be cracked in 0.00000183 seconds.
Right.
But then I start putting, you know, a bunch of comma periods until I have 20 characters, and now it's going to take 800 billion centuries.
Right. Right.
Because 20 characters is better even than randomness of a shorter length.
Right.
Or like Steve and I know we've brought this up before, you know, we go to so many different places and we can find passwords so easily, whether it's taped the bottom of a mouse pad, underneath the keyboard.
Or when all the OSs have a password hint feature. If you type the password wrong a couple of times, it gives you a hint. Don't put your password in the hint. It's right. Supposed to be a hint of what your password is, not the actual password.
My first name.
Well, yeah. And this is the thing. When people use the security question, they actually answer it correctly. Why? For example, your first dog's name, Altoona, PA.
Yep.
Screw you. That's it.
Yeah, yep. It doesn't care.
Guess that.
It doesn't care either.
It doesn't care.
That sort of happened to me 20-odd years ago when I was an AOL form assistant.
Right.
Someone had broken into my account, and they changed my security questions. So when I couldn't get back in, I call up AOL, and you know, I'm having trouble. And, well, okay, what your security question was, who's the Secretary of State? So I told him, that's not the answer.
Right.
Well, yes, it is. So the bad guy who broke into my account changed it to Pee Wee Herman.
See? Exactly.
So there's no way I could have... So that was actually rigmarole. I had to give them checkbook. You know, we need a copy of the check that your account was created. Well, I've had this account for 20 years. I probably don't have that checking account anymore.
But that's really the way to do it. When you answer the security questions, lie. And then you can use a program like KeePass to remember your lies. Right?
Yeah.
Then if my, you know, who's the Secretary of State is Altoona, PA, I've got that written down in front of me and I know that. So nobody can guess what your question is. All right, we're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. On the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hello, this is Paul Conley. Join me early on Monday mornings from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
All right, we're back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we have Bob from Rush on Soundbites. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
I just recently had to install a power supply in my HP pavilion.
Mm-hmm.
As I was installing it, my eyes glanced over to the motherboard, and there's this little wafer battery.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wondered exactly what the function of that is, so I went to my HP manual, and the thing that they said was that it controls the clock. Now, somewhere I seem to have heard or read that that thing also is involved in powering the CMOS somehow.
Well, what it does is it saves all the information in the CMOS about your system. In other words, it saves the date and the time, your time zone that you're in, and say you want to have the passwords on or your booting order. It's all in the BIOS.
Right, and the reason that you need the battery there is because CMOS is just RAM. And as you know, when you remove the power from RAM, what's ever in that RAM dies. And the CMOS only needs a trickle, but it's got to have it, and that's what the battery's for.
Okay, now what's the trick for replacing that battery? Well, first of all, how do I know if the battery's going bad?
If you're losing time.
The usual symptom is your date and time is lost, but all the computers these days synchronize their time over the Internet. So you may not notice the date and time is being lost because when the machine is booting up, it synchronizes
and
itself.
And also, all the stuff that's in the CMOS, the system can automatically figure out. So if, in fact, the battery is dead, then the system will actually
tell you
replace
date and time.
All the data that was in there. And that's, what are you going to do? But what you want to do is replace that battery because it makes booting just a little bit faster.
Okay, so there's no real secret procedure for replacing that battery.
No, you just have to know which battery it is. It's probably a CR2032.
Yeah, that's the most common one, which
it's
is 3 volts.
Battery,
so if you got a voltmeter, you can test it to see if it's putting out the right voltage.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
There you go. Yeah, they're not as necessary as they used to be. And they only are ever working when the computer is turned off.
Well,
actually,
not even that.
Many of them when it's unplugged.
Yeah, when it's unplugged. Even when the computer is turned off, there's still a trickle charge going through the computer, keeping power. But if you have your stuff plugged into a power strip and then hit the switch on the power strip to turn everything off, then you actually have, in essence, unplugged it.
Yep.
And it uses your battery all the time in that way. So we've seen people who their batteries have lasted 10 years because they never unplug their computer. And some people, it will die in less than a year because they turn the power switch off every night.
Yep. And the same is true of laptops. If you keep the battery charged, it'll trickle charge from the battery, which is why, even though this thing, for example, I left it for about 4 days without touching it, my netbook, when I came back, some of the battery had been used.
Yep.
Why? Because I had...
Yep.
It was trickle charge.
That's a story you've got. The Mountline battery issue.
Oh, yeah. Let me read this story.
Well, on the Mac, we usually call that the backup battery because it's backing up the main battery of the laptop.
Right.
And I love the battery life, though, on our Nexus.
Up to 9 hours.
That is...
9 hours of video playback. Thank you very much.
And what is it? It's a ridiculous number on
300
standby.
300 hours on standby.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
It's wild. I love
All right. Speaking of which, some bit of software within Mountain Lion, not to be confused with Snoop Lion, appears to noticeably reduce... Will he change his name when there's a new version of... Never mind. appears to noticeably reduce battery life for Apple's portable Macs. Testing on a Retina MacBook Pro showed it seemed to lose approximately 38% of its previous 8-hour runtime after installing Mountain Lion. Apple support technicians are continuing to gather evidence from users reporting problems, though at least one user has been told about that an update from the Apple Mac, the Mac App Store should address the issue. Numerous MacBook, MacBook Pro, and MacBook Air users have begun reporting that the battery life reported by their systems was significantly lower after upgrading to Mountain Lion. In some cases, they were seeing nearly half the amount of time that was reported previously under Lion. The batteries themselves also seem to drain noticeably faster, despite the system reporting that the capacity has not been affected. But some claim that their battery life under Mountain Lion is as good as or better than it was under Lion, so the problem does not appear to affect all users. Some users in Apple's forums reported potential fixes, including repairing disk permissions or access control lists, disabling or reinstalling Dropbox, which I hate, or resetting Gatekeeper to allow apps to install from any source. These fixes didn't work for all users, but together they could be a sign of a problem somewhere between Mountain Lion security systems, like sandboxing and file quarantine, and the file system. Unexpected file system or network access or less efficient use of the GPU could cause additional power drain without showing significant CPU usage. One Apple support forum user who was contacted by Apple suggested, suggested that the cause was software specific and not related to any hardware or faulty batteries. He said, I can confirm this. The forum user said, I can confirm this. It's definitely a software OS issue, as the guy that was dealing with me said that an update will be issued via the Mac App Store as soon as they work a fix. Apple was certainly not able to confirm or deny that a fix was forthcoming. So, have you tried Mountain Lion? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
I'm wondering if they're just redoing the app to refigure the math. So it doesn't look so bad, even though it is a decrease. You know, they just do, oh, now it's better. We just changed the calculation.
Yeah, we fixed it. Yeah. One of the new features in Mountain Lion is called Power Nap. And what it does is it's sort of between awake and sleep. You know, your computer's taking a nap. So when you put your computer to sleep, Power Nap will let it still get mail. It will still update your calendar. It will put your reminders open.
Because you can't wait the 8 seconds after you open it up to do all that stuff. Jeez and crackers, you people are pampered. Unbelievable. Oh, my God. I might miss an email that I'm not using my computer to see anyway.
Yep.
But
that might be junk mail.
When they announced that feature in the announcement, I'm thinking, well, that's going to eat up battery life because now your computer's not as asleep as it used to be. It's only taking a nap.
Really? Soon, the next time you buy an Apple computer, you will be issued a valet.
They did that already.
To read your emails to you.
The 20th anniversary Mac was delivered and set up by valet for you.
Unfreaking believable. All right, this is cheese and crackers. The new eye wipe. All right, our next caller is Phil from Webster, New York. Welcome, Phil. What's your question?
I have the Google Redirect virus.
The
I
Google,
can't
I'm sorry.
To shake it off.
Sorry.
The Google Redirect virus.
I've tried ever. I've gone on, actually Googled how to get rid of it. I've danced a security tango. I've done everything I can think of. But every time I go to Google and I click on the link to go to where I want to go, it redirects me to some other place.
Yeah, it's a browser hijacker is what it really is.
I found something at ehow.com.
Where? Yeah, there's something
at ehow. So, Google on another machine where to go, and then you can go there. So I'll post that on our link list so you can go directly there.
Or you could try a different browser to at least...
Bing or Yahoo or,
He's infected.
Yeah, but the fact that you have one infection kind of implies there might be more there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've danced the security tango?
Yes, and when I did the malware anti-whatever that is in the safe mode, it took some stuff off. but it didn't change this
problem. Well, and a lot of times you have to run it again and again because some of them get removed, and then you run it again, and now others can get removed.
That's also a signature of one of the root kits.
Yep.
Right. What you want to also do, here's the thing you need to do, and this is not quite as bad as going into the registry, but you want to be very, 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 very careful when you do this. Under Windows, System 32, Drivers, etc., there is a file called Hosts. And if you edit that, and all you need is Notepad or whatever you want to use.
Just say it, yeah.
Notepad, in fact, is best because it's a text file. When you edit that, you should see a line with a number that's something dot something dot something dot something followed by google.com.
Okay.
If that number is not 173.194.43.0, you're going to the wrong place. In fact, it doesn't matter where it goes. Delete the line. That's the change that's been made to your system. When you go to any website, anywhere, ever, anywhere, your operating system, your web browser, your operating system, whatever program you're using, first looks in the hosts file to see if it already knows where this is. Remember, the internet doesn't understand words. It only understands numbers. So when you go to google.com, it actually goes out to what's called a domain name server and says, where the heck is google.com? Domain name server says, oh, it's a 173.194.43.0. But before it does that, it looks in its hosts file to see if it already knows where that is. So when you say google.com, it looks in the hosts file and says, oh, that's really over here. And it's clearly taking you to not Google.
So when I'm Googling things and I'm getting my search results, it's not really Google?
It likely is not, no.
Correct.
Huh.
Or it may be that this one's a little more sophisticated, and only when you try to go to one of the sites that tells you how to get rid of this virus that it takes you somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But again, it would be in the
Google
host.
Google tomato plants, and it would take me to someplace else.
There you go. That's your problem.
The better of these URL redirect hijackers specifically look for like Citibank or PayPal to steal your information. The better ones will then pass you on to the real website if they don't find ones they're trying to crack.
Right.
But so that could be why some of your searches are working and some of them aren't.
Right. But I would suggest you go into that host file and anything that says google.com, delete the whole line.
Yep.
Including that number in front of it.
So just so that I have this straight, because you are going fast and I have a chance to write it down. So I'm going to go to start with
Windows.
Windows. Yeah.
System 32.
Yep.
Drivers, uh-huh. Etc.
Drivers, etc. And then I'm looking for something that says Google.
No, host. You're looking for a file called hosts. A
file called hosts.
Host.ini?
No, just host.
I think it's an ini file.
Well, it depends on whether or not. No, it should be just hosts.
Right. Yeah.
No, no .ini, no nothing, just hosts. And when you open that up, you should see some copyright, blah, 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 sample host file, blah, 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 blah. And then at the bottom, and those all have octothorpes, hash marks, pound signs in front of them. The pound sign means comment. So you don't have to change anything there. But you should see a line that says 127.0.0.1. A couple of tabs and localhost, and then you may also see. You may have to scroll down. You may also see some lines that relate to Google. Get rid of all the lines that relate to Google. Do not get rid of the line that says localhost.
Here's the problem, though, that he's going to do because he's using Notepad. When he goes to save it, it is going to save it as a text file. What he's going to have to do is then delete the original host file. And rename that host.txt as just host.
Yeah, if it saves it as host.txt.
It will. Your Notepad right. will die so, by default.
So take the extension off of there. When
yeah,
I
exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
Then you want to go, and here's the next thing you want to do.
There's always a then we got to go.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Then you want to open up your control panel and go into local area connection and hit properties.
Okay.
In there, you want to select internet protocol and look and see if it has set a DNS server, and also look and see look and see if it's changed your DNS server. You should have none. It should say obtain DNS server address.
I was just going to say, doesn't it obtain it automatically or something?
It's supposed to. If they've changed it, they're going to their own DNS servers, mm-hmm. and now all bets are off. It doesn't matter if there's anything in the host file or not.
But if I click on that obtain one automatically, will that solve that problem?
Well, the first thing you should probably do is delete the ones that are in the DNS server and then and while it's still active, and then click on obtain DNS server address automatically.
Okay.
And for all the people that this is way beyond, bring it into a shop.
Yeah.
So you can bring it into a shop and they'll do it simply and easily.
Well, it's always worth a try first, right?
Yep.
Right. And then you want to go – are you using Internet Explorer? Yeah, well, stop doing that. But while you're still doing that, you want to go into Tools, Internet Options, Connection tab, LAN Settings, and uncheck Use a Proxy Server.
Okay. I think
we're done.
Yep.
If that doesn't solve it, it might be a rootkit, and then you do have to bring it in somewhere.
If that doesn't solve it, give me an address to take it to.
Just go to the Soundbites webpage. Both Steve and our, my business are located listed there.
Okay, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. I hope this works.
Yep.
Me too. Good luck.
Good luck.
Thanks.
That sounds like it's one of the more sophisticated hijacks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Did we confuse them enough?
Yeah.
Do you think?
Well, that's the thing, though. We don't want to tell them too much because if they go in there and mess around with stuff, that I don't want to be responsible.
Right. And the reality is, we as Dave just said, we do not recommend you do any of those things. Absolutely none of them. We recommend that you take it to a shop and let a professional screw it up, because they'll then fix it. So that would probably be the best thing to do. In the meantime, while you contemplate that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you're still listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And I should read another item here. Oh, in the You Can't Make This Stuff Up category, last week the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation held a hearing on marketplace fairness, leveling the playing field for small businesses, which is basically the internet tax bill, but failed to take testimony from a single e-commerce company that opposes the bill. Why would senators try so hard to stack the deck in favor of the proposed bill? Main Street fairness would allow state governments to require out-of-state retailers to collect and remit sales tax on purchases shipped to those residents of those states. Forrester Research says the average U.S. online shopper will spend $1,738 by 2016. Assuming an average U.S. sales tax of 9.6% at that time, the changes could equate to an average additional expense to you and me in our e-shopping carts of $167 in 2016,
right,
which is when the law would take effect. That's money senators can take credit for shoveling into state coffers, but don't want to advertise would come out of of e-shopper pockets.
Yeah.
Although the Senate was apparently unable to find anyone to speak against the internet tax bill, I've done them a favor. Here are some quotes from dissenters. Touchboards.com President Richard Wagner said this act should be called the States Need More Money Act.
Mm-hmm.
If at the federal level any new tax collected or deduction appealed a repeal is called a tax increase, then this is certainly the biggest tax increase on the middle class in over two decades. On a positive side, this should create jobs. If this passes, the states will hire thousands of auditors to call on and investigate small internet vendors across the country. Bolingbrook, Illinois-based power equipment direct founder and CEO John Hock argued the Main Street Fairness Act has little to do with Main Street or fairness. Small retailers have every right to build e-commerce sites and start competing today. It's actually about big boxes lobbying politicians complaining that they aren't big enough already. El Segundo, California-based PCRush.com founder and COO Frank Khalili says, by the very nature of the model, internet retailers support an enormity of jobs and tax revenue. For example, when factoring the cost of shipping, which in itself goes a long way in leveling the playing field, there is an entire machine that creates jobs, pays fuel taxes, state and local taxes, payroll taxes, and in general contributes mightily to the coffers of all communities involved in the transaction. So, do you buy a lot of stuff online, and do you love it, and are you willing to pay more in taxes to do it? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
The sad thing, well...
You're just not going to get things tax-free.
Well, I got two, you know, I have two hats here, probably three, because I didn't expect the Spanish Inquisition. You're supposed to pay that tax anyway on your income tax forms.
Right.
Every state has a sales and use tax line that asks you, did you buy anything out of state? If so, you got to pay your taxes. I know New York has a standardized line where you can say it's $1,000. I forget whatever. A standard line versus individual listing of everything you bought, but you're still supposed to pay it yourself. But then as a small retailer ourselves, we constantly hear from people, well, why should I buy from you and not Amazon? Because Amazon doesn't charge tax.
Right.
But you're supposed to pay it anyway. They don't collect the tax. That doesn't mean you're not supposed to pay it.
And they're going after the retailers to do it, because if they went after you to do it, you wouldn't vote for them next time.
Yeah. Yep. You'd be the heavy, even though they're turning around and getting you anyways.
Yeah. And from the retail standpoint, it's been an incredible burden that there are over 7,000 different tax municipalities in the country, and your software, well, now it's a little easier. Your software has to know about them all to charge the right tax. We at Jesse Group have problems because we have stores in Monroe County and Ontario County, and each county has different taxes.
Tax rates.
So depending on where we are when we sell something, you have to collect a different tax.
Right.
And then we sometimes work with Livingston County and Wyoming County, all the other counties around here. Fortunately, we only pay New York, and then they disperse it at the other end, but we still have to collect the right rate for each county we do business in. And it's very frustrating.
And what if somebody buys something in Monroe?
Going to Wayne County. Return it in Wayne County.
Right.
They could get more money, more credit.
Typically, this tax is calculated from the point of purchase. So if you go to our Victor store, you pay Ontario tax. But because we've run into this before, if you're from a county with a different tax, and there's even states that don't have sales tax, there's some loophole in the law that you can collect the tax in their municipality, not yours. And that makes it even harder for us. We had some people from Texas buy stuff, and then the Texas sent us forms for us to pay the tax back. I don't know how they found out about it, because these people probably declared it on your
income. Doggone them. For being honest, doggone them.
Yeah.
Well,
we're seeing that with our big distributors, the big national distributors like Ingram and Tech Data. Some states, California and New York, and Texas among them, have already threatened, or if not implemented, these, in essence, internet taxes, so that the distributors are collecting that tax anyway. So if we buy something from a warehouse in California, they charge us California sales tax when they sell it to us, even though we're reselling it at New York sales tax, so the product gets taxed twice.
Sure.
And we have to fill out forms in California to get that money back, and it's very frustrating. And we try not to get stuff from the California warehouse.
Well, exactly. And I'm one of the startup companies I'm working with is selling stuff over the internet, but it's a service.
Yeah, that gets tricky.
And that gets tricky. Luckily, we have a very high-powered lawyer who will read the bill if it comes into law and tell us what we're supposed to do. So
yeah,
I don't have to worry my little head about
that. When we do a training, there's no tax. But when we sell a product, there's tax.
Right.
So if there's a tangible product involved, there's tax. But without a tangible product, but then we run into the agricultural exemption, because New York, in this area, also is such a big agricultural. If a farmer comes in to buy something, farmers aren't taxed. So they buy a computer to track their dairy herd. There's no tax because it's an agricultural issue. So it's weird. We got tax audited a few years ago, yeah. and luckily we ended up collecting too much tax, so there were no fines.
But you don't get the money back.
We don't get the money back, no. Right. But then the guy said he uses our records to see who to go after next. So this person claimed they were tax exempt. I'm going to go check them out.
Oh, nice.
Sorry.
Well, you've just made a whole lot of enemies over here.
No lie.
We'll go back to the phones and talk to Bodan in Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bodan. What's your question?
Gentlemen, good afternoon.
How are you?
I want to pay you a compliment, Nick. You corrected and you gave me advice. Your wisdom, your knowledge corrected my flash issue with Chrome browser.
Well, I'm delighted. What did I tell you?
Well, the problem was that when I was going to full screen watching any kind of video clip, which was a flash-related issue, it was freezing. It was going into, first gear. It was not playing synchronized. The audio and video was not matching up. And you and Steve gave me the advice of go into type in about plugins and go and see how many versions of plugin I had.
Right.
I had three. So I had to disable the two associated with the Chrome browser, only keeping the original one associated with the PC. I turned those two off, and now everything is squeaky clean.
So we actually gave you a correct answer.
Mark
yes,
that down.
And I'm calling to thank you.
Well, you're welcome. We're surprised, but you're welcome.
Well, you men are the knowledge of computers in Rochester.
Well, that's a sad state for Rochester, but thank you very much.
You are welcome. Just taking a minute to compliment you. Thank you very much.
I appreciate that. We
you're
all
welcome.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Well, that'll never happen again.
Yeah.
I don't know how we get.
You know, like
right
a squirrel. We get lucky once in a while and find a nut.
That's right. That's right. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while. People are always asking me, how do you know all this stuff? And I always tell them, I don't. I lie. You people are asking the questions. You don't know the answers. I can say anything I want.
What's interesting, though.
As long as they can't find me again.
That's the thing, though. They can you because you even do an article in the paper.
Yeah,
so.
I'm everywhere, so they can find me, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
To truthfully answer the question, we sometimes don't know, but we can Google. But
there is that.
Mm-hmm. I've tried to show people how to Google. We've had seminars at the Apple Cider Users Group on how to use Google efficiently and the different tricks you can put in. But there's an art to Googling.
Really?
People have said they've searched Google and can't find the answer. I type something in, and the first link is the answer.
You know who really owns the internet? Librarians. Because
yep.
If you've taken library science, you've studied the science of searching. And if you've studied the science of searching, you own Google.
Yep. The librarian is who you used to go to find answers.
People always
if they didn't know offhand, they knew where to look.
I always used to, writing papers in high school and in college, people would say, where did you find this stuff? I said, I called the library and asked them. That's what they do.
Yep.
You know, so, and I guess now I'm at the other end. Karma's a, you know what, people are calling me and asking me what to do, and I get it, I get it, but yeah, you should definitely learn to search. There are classes you can take on how to search, but the reality is that you got to have, it's an art as much as it is a science.
Yeah, because we shouldn't tell them too much about that, because we'd be out of a job.
That's right. That's right. We'd sit here for 2 hours talking about Nexus 7s and iPads and movies, and nobody'd call in.
Or tonight, the Perseid Media Shower tonight.
That's right.
We were talking about stargazing and rocket launching. I found this cool picture of astronaut Don Pettit. Who somehow manages to have like 300 pounds of camera on the ISS. And some
must be everybody who brought up,
yeah.
Came up, brought him one. Right?
Amazing time-lapse photos.
All right, don't forget
out.
To watch the Perseid Meteor Showers tonight. It's not too late to send Steve Wozniak a birthday card. We want to thank all of you for listening to the last 2 hours of the show. The German show is coming up next. It's the best German music you'll hear all week. So definitely George is here. Linda is going to keep him in line. She's got the whip uncoiled already. And we'll be back next week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. At 55 minutes after the hour, you've wasted way too much of your life listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites. And for no good reason, we will continue to be right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.